Good evening, and welcome to another episode of Nigeria Politics Weekly. As usual, my name is Michael, and co-hosting with me is Phoenix. Today, we have one guest. Our guest is Dr. Aminu. Dr. Aminu is a university lecturer in economics, as well as a member of one of the opposition parties, the People's Democratic Party. Now, this week, we'll be discussing three topics. Firstly, we'll discuss the attacks on Plateau State, and in particular, a town in Plateau State called Mangu. Secondly, we'll discuss the controversy surrounding the Central Bank of Nigeria's decision to move certain departments from Abuja to Lagos. And thirdly, we'll discuss the visit to Nigeria of the United States Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. So, Phoenix, first of all, Mangu in Plateau State. What is happening? Can you talk us through the issues? Because on social media and in the news, there are reports that villagers have been attacked by, some say, herdsmen, others say it's a communal clash. But can you explain to us, Phoenix, in summary, what is happening in Plateau State?
Hi, Michael, and hi, Nasir. Thanks for joining us. And of course, hello, listeners. first of all, to apologize that we haven't been on for a couple of weeks, but we promise that it's a return to regular programming. I'm sure Michael will share some good news very soon, which will explain some of the reasons why we've not been able to come together. But yeah, Michael, I have found myself in the last month trying to figure out what is special about Mangu, and it's good that we have Doc on the call, and he being of northern extraction and obviously maybe knows that part of the world better than I do, can maybe shed some light. But I can't for the life of me understand why this nondescript part of Plateau State keeps getting hit by what we surely have to call terrorists. If you remember, on Christmas Day, there was an attack on Mangu that led to about 140 casualties. I mean, civilians, of all ages, using their lives to an attack, just mindless slaughter and killing. And then we heard a few days ago, another attack, 30 dead. And you wonder what's going on in Plateau State. I mean, to be honest, we've known that the Middle Belt has been an area of crisis for a long time. We saw throughout the Buhari regime the attacks on Benue State, but now it seems like Plateau, and anyone who knows a bit of, history of Nigeria knows that Plateau State has usually been a hotbed, but was in that time, I'm talking about the 90s and so on. It used to be, and I think even going into 2000, it used to be more of a religious connotation. If you look at the demographic of Plateau State, it's a predominant, it's more, it has more Christians than Muslims for a northern state. And I think there's always been some back and forth trying to get supremacy and all of that, that has led to crisis that unfortunately continues to create insecurity and unrest. And even worse, I mean, ordinary civilians, bearing the brunt of these issues. But in as much as this continues to confound me, I can't but, as I have always done, hold government and its security agencies accountable. And I'm sure we'll discuss this in detail. I am firmly of the in the school of my doctrine is usually, you have to use a heavy hand to send a message, and that's what people understand. That if you don't deal with something decisively, you will never be able to stop people. What I mean, bad actors. You would never be able to stop them because what we see is they get emboldened and they continue to do this thing over and over again. Like I said, you just had an attack, less than a month ago on Christmas Day. We've seen another attack. So you can imagine that this is going to happen again. It's you don't need a crystal ball to tell that. And the only reason is because we're not dealing decisively and sending a message clearly to these bad actors that this is not acceptable. And for that, the government is absolutely culpable and needs to be made to needs to be held accountable for this failure and these loss of lives. I send my condolences to the families of those who have been affected, and I hope that in this Nigeria, this insecurity, this fact that some of us can never be safe in their homes where they are, it comes to an end as soon as possible.
Thank you, Phoenix. You've touched on the issue of government responsibility. There have been criticisms of Bola Tinubu that at the very point at which these attacks were taking place, he seems to have gone to Paris on what he describes as a private visit. And then a video was published on the internet showing him and his national security advisor, Nuhu Ribadu, in a room shaking hands, congratulating themselves because the Super Eagles scored a goal. Does that, in your view, raise questions about the seriousness with which they're taking the security crisis in the country, Phoenix?
Of course it does. I mean, you know me well enough, Michael, to know that another part of things that I hold very important is signaling. I can't understand why President and Commander in Chief, does not have. Now, I'm not saying don't celebrate Super Eagles' performance. I mean, or anything like that, but. But before that, if we have seen enough empathy, if we have seen enough, strong words and action, then he can maybe you can maybe give him, you can give him a break for celebrating Super Eagles. But where you don't see anything like that, and all that we see is this nonchalant attitude, not showing as much interest or desire to go and handle the situation as it should be, then of course he has to be called out. But for me again, I've talked about this guy not being prepared to do the job and the manner in which he came to power, perhaps speaks to this, and maybe this is what people should have expected. But this is I mean, unacceptable. It is.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, I've got a series of questions to ask. And the first is there is debate amongst or within the academic and the intellectual community as to the nature of this crisis. Some people say it's a religious battle between Christian farmers and Muslim herders. Others say no, that it's a battle about land or access to minerals. Apparently, there's some people say there's tin in the area, and that's what this fight is about. A third school of thought says it's a climate change debate, that apparently, because of climate change, herders are leaving their barren lands and trying to access fertile lands in the Middle Belt, i.e., Plateau State. So, in your view, Dr. Aminu, what is happening? Is this a religious, ethnic, climate change related, or mineral related?
Good evening, and thank you for having me. I think to answer your question, it's a combination of all. The thing that I dislike and I disagree with, and because there's no evidence, is the case of land grab. I'm not very. I'm not from the school of thought that thinks this is a case of mineral issue, but it could be. But if you listened, I listened to the report this morning where people came up and they said their generals, in Mangu are currently. As Phoenix mentioned, it is going to be ongoing unless someone steps in. But when we are talking about climate change, we are talking about people that are passing by. If you look at this situation, when I was hearing this morning, it is a situation or it is a reprisal attack that was quenched this morning between the Fulani dwellers in that area and the indigenous of that area. There are dwellers, Fulani people move around with their cattle, and there are some also that are dwelling in various bushes or sectors or areas or lands or towns or villages. Notwithstanding, this is also can also be we can all connect them to Muslim Fulani people and Christian Fulani people. There is a persistent attacks, reprisal attack, as Phoenix mentioned earlier. But in all honesty, we have to talk about the leadership. Now, when I say I do disagree with the case of land ownership, Plateau State is owned, I mean, is governed by a Christian leaders. If you look at the support that Caleb Mutfwang got, from all across the board, but what did he do? He only, I mean, all his commissioners are Christians except one. So what is the point I'm trying to make here is, if you have this domination of one religion, how can you say that particular religion are also being oppressed? The chief of defense staff is Christian. Lagbaja, I don't know where he's from. I mean, his religion, but he's from the south.
No,
Definitely.
General Lakbaja is a Muslim from Osun State.
Oh, okay. But he's not Fulani. For him to support this barbaric act that is happening. So what I can't understand, if there were, and we all have the Land Act, so let's take, for example, Commissioner of Plateau State, who is a Christian. How can he be so incompetent, to say some people have just killed his own people that he swore to serve and taking over their land, and he's just a sitting duck, just saying, folding his arms, that he cannot do. That is something that my logic cannot allow me comprehend. We all have the laws, how are they going, how have they been, if that is what they are doing, how have they been claiming it? We have property rights in Nigeria, even though we are as bad, I mean, we can be very bad, but there are laws, that governs all these situations. Nonetheless, this is something that has taken a very, very long time to curb. And I think if the government is really serious, let's be honest, for me, I know the situation, I mean, they always bring soldiers down when I was soldiers on board when they want to be serious. This morning, what they were talking about is soldiers came. Fulanis were rising up, the local people were rising up. So what soldiers did were they ended up shooting at the local people. And what the soldiers said was it is the local people that started shooting at them and they were shooting back. It's one, I mean, this is me listening from one side of the news. You go on the Christmas Day shooting, it was barbaric, and my prayers goes to all those who lost their lives, But you come back, you see on Arise TV people saying, bringing alternative news. Arise TV, I mean, that I to a certain degree respect, saying that they are local peoples, that were killing their own locals, So this seems, get to confuse you to a certain degree. What do you believe? Who do you believe? Which side do you stand on? And in all honesty, it does nobody any favor, and all it does it is it keeps dividing us across these lines, and it's something that I do not like. I hate to see happen. It raises my anxiety whenever these things happen, because we want to have a united Nigeria. We want to kick out this government as quickly as possible, and this division is only what will keep them in power. And it's something that I do not know. So to answer your question, I think if we want to go through getting it sorted, we need to look at things at community-based issues. Now, when it happened during the Christmas time period, I was on social media and I was speaking, and I said, I bet you nobody is going to call for further investigation of how where we came on this isolated events, how it started, where we are, and in fact the total number of people that were killed. It has died down, everything has died down. It went back to politics. He has won politics, he has gone, he has put in a 4 p.m. to 8 a.m. curfew yesterday. Nobody is talking about how do we go back and investigate why this thing happened. In 6 months' time, we will be talking about another one. We need to look at it from have a thorough investigation. How did it happen? Who are the people responsible? And instead of them confusing me like they confused me this morning, soldiers said this, the local people said that, then it's up to me to choose which side to believe. One is definitely telling lies. But who is telling lies? It all comes down to our biases. So we need a proper investigation where we need to have this group of individuals, stakeholders, the leaders in those communities, let them tell us the truth. Let them report and provide a sustainable solution. But if we all keep saying, it is everybody just reporting their own version of the truth, what that tells me is the leaders are enjoying it. And when I
Dr.
say
Abinu, I just need to get clarification on this issue because there's two points. On the one hand, a number of people from the Middle Belt part of the North have pointed out the fact that the president, the chief of army staff, the national security advisor are all of the same religion. He says that they say they are all Muslim, and this is therefore a conspiracy against that. Whenever they try to defend themselves, the military seem to stop them from doing that and then leave them open to attacks. And the second thing they've said is a few videos were published online which showed the attackers hacking the villagers to death. And you could hear from the attackers, they were shouting, Allahu Akbar. And what the Middle Belters are alleging is that this is clear evidence that this is tied to what we call Islamist extremism.
Extremism or
So
terrorism. Yeah.
yes, so that their view is it's incorrect to claim that there is no religious angle to this issue. So how do you respond to that?
Well, how am I going to respond to that? I believe I'm not on trial here, but from that particular video, which I initially believed, then they came back and debunked it and said this. There was a social media handle that said this is from their handle that happened somewhere in some in West Africa, the videos they were sharing. So you see, there are things that I'm not denigrating, or I'm not saying that this is debunked, or it did not happen. And like I mentioned, I also talked about the Arise TV video. We do not have full what do you call it, interim investigation and full report that this is actually what happened. And this is how it all died down during the Christmas period. The videos people were sharing that they were saying Allahu Akbar with a baby, with a woman and a baby at her on her back. They said it was a fake video, not a fake video, but it came from another place. I think it's Zaragoza or something like that. I'm trying to remember the name of that social media handle that reported that. And obviously some African handles too were talking about it. So With all these things, you know, now the Lagbaja is a Muslim, you know, but for me, as far as I'm concerned, knowing the claims of this Muslim conspiracy that they are talking about, making it look like a Zionist movement, I believe it is nonsense. Why do I say it is nonsense? It's because whatever is happening in Mangu is happening in Zamfara, in even a worst case scenario, situation, because we have information and there is a report that we all get to see that you see bandits being caught, you know, because they are taxing communities, you know, they are even landlords in communities, which is not happening. Imagine if this was happening in Mangula, those kind of bandits taxing people in that area. Imagine the kind of narrative it would have taken. So it is an incompetence situation that we have by the Nigerian military, regardless of their religion. Are we saying that we have the chief of defense staff, you know, that is superior to Lagbaja? Are we saying he's culpable? Then he must be one of the most underrated people, you know, I mean, that we can have, you know, for him to see his people, you know, being killed like that and standing. So for me, I do not believe in that conspiracy theory. It's gross incompetence by this APC government. They have their agenda. I don't know how to classify that agenda, but I know they have their agenda that is completely evil across everybody, not just one religion. It is only for themselves because it is happening across everywhere, you know, in Nigeria. It's not just limited to one person or one particular religion. It is happening across the board. Wherever you go, you know, people are being killed, maimed, you know, everything. The only problem is that they are very happy if they blame it on religion, not their individual selves. This is my perspective, and this is how I see it. And if we are happy, I mean, I'm not we are happy. I hope one day we will get into power and make sure we investigate this thoroughly. Obasanjo did it. He did a proper investigation in 2004, and since then, you know, things have kept calm until when these guys came back to power. So it's not like it does not happen, but when you conduct a thorough investigation, stay on top of the game, then be competent, appoint competent people. Lagbaja is incompetent. We all know why he got there, because he's daddy's boy, you know. So we don't know. I mean, he can do whatever they tell him to do. If it is that is their kind of agenda, then obviously that should be their agenda. But for me, why am I saying this? Is because it is also affecting my own people, you know, my own village, you know, my own town. People are getting maimed, killed everywhere. So if you tell me that, then I'm not going to believe it. That's my point.
Thank you, Dr. Aminu. The final question on this topic goes to Phoenix because of time. So, Phoenix, what a number of people are struggling to understand, and that perhaps includes myself, is the fact that you have an army, you have a police force, you have the DSS, the State Security Services, and nobody seems to be able to secure these territories. Is it that these attackers have sophisticated weapons that are beyond the capabilities of our security forces? Is that what the issue is? Or what exactly is the problem, Phoenix? Why can't we seem to be able to secure the country from any form? Not even just these attacks. Kidnapping seem to happen at will, and the police never seem to be able to arrest the kidnappers, even though they're communicating via standard mobile phones. So what is the issue, Phoenix?
I think Doc has pointed to one of the issues in my view, which is, gross incompetence by the people who have this the responsibility. I mean, basically, your security forces, their leaders don't know what they're doing. But to my mind, there's a possibility of an even more insidious reason, which is that they are culpable, and they simply do not care. And that for me is more worrisome, because you can assume that, oh, Mangu is far away from anywhere important, and therefore it's okay. I mean, it's not okay, but I mean, I'm talking about the potential mindsets that they might have in their heads, because I can't understand why, even from a pride perspective, why would you want to lead a country that people who should not have the capability are keeping you from being able to secure your people? How long does it take? You've been in office for going on 8 months now, and in that time you do not have a solution, even though we were told that you are the best prepared president, that you've been preparing for this issue for so long that you were ready to hit the ground running, and you had your plans. We remember all the talk you were talking when Jonathan was in power, and all the things you were saying. You're now in office. First, one of the first things you did was to change the service chief. So we assumed that you actually knew what you were doing, that you were putting in place people who will be able to do the work. I remember raising a concern back then about the capability of the person you appointed as NSA. And so when we see the issues still persisting, when we see no clear sign that you'll be able to address this within a short space of time, I mean, it can only be that you are grossly incompetent, which is what the signs tell us, or even worse, that you are part of this whole collusion, to subjugate a certain part of our country and not keep the people safe. And so it behoves on us as Nigerians to keep talking about this and to keep holding, the government accountable to make sure that they get their act together and do something about it. If it cannot be that these people have more weapons than Nigeria, we just saw the budget that they just passed and all the money that they've put into defense. And it didn't just start today. They've been doing that consistently over the last decade. We've been told that, we don't have a large number of boots on ground. What will it take to recruit people into the military, train them properly, and make sure that, in these hot spots that we know, let's have strong military and security presence. Let's go in there and, with a very clear show of force, to push these terrorists, push them as far out of Nigeria, and make sure that them coming into Nigeria and doing these raids, them their ability to do this thing is severely degraded. But we don't have serious-minded people in charge. We don't have capable people in charge. And so we continue to see these issues and continue to talk about insecurity as if it is rocket science and something that cannot be handled. It is not. It is not.
Thank you, Phoenix. But on to our next topic, which is the economic news concerning the central bank. So this question is also for you, Phoenix. There's been a controversy because the governor of the central bank, Yemi Cardoso, announced that, or as I don't know how or why, people on Twitter seem to call him Cardi B. I'm not quite sure who or what that is. But Yemi Cardoso has announced that certain departments from the central bank in Abuja are now being transferred to Lagos. And this seems to have triggered all kinds of outcry. Some people say it's an attempt by Bola Tinubu to turn governance into a Lagos-based affair. A few northern politicians have come out to condemn the decision. But I just want to get your views, Phoenix. First of all, what are these departments that are being moved? Is it the central bank itself moving to Abuja or to Lagos? Who is moving? And in your view, is it necessary?
Well, I mean, if we go by what we were told, I mean, by the central bank, and the departments that are moving, mainly banking, supervision, and all of that it should not be something that raises any concern, But this is a country where we major on the minor. This is a country where everything is politicized. This is a country where, you know, and this is a legacy of the political class, which was made worse by the 8 years of Buhari and Emefiele, where they turned the central bank into an appendage of the presidency. And that's why everyone now thinks the central bank, which has been debased, it's been used for, you know, for all the cronies of government or everybody who could get access to put in their wards, their children into the central bank and turn it into another MDA. Because if it's, I mean, you look at this, you look at the central bank and you say, I mean, think about it as any bank, any normal bank. You don't operate from one location. It is called the Central Bank of Nigeria for a reason. The Central Bank of Nigeria has branches all over the country, the country, because because to manage its operations, just by sheer need to move cash, you know, and you know, it's crazy that anyone thinks that everything about the central bank should be in Abuja. And then when they talk, when you know, when they then talk about the kinds of departments that are moving to Lagos, the departments that are moving to Lagos are the departments where, you know, banking supervision and the banks they supervise, the headquarters of those banks are mostly in Lagos, which everyone, there's nobody that would debate that Lagos is the commercial nerve center of Nigeria, is the financial center of Nigeria. And there are many countries that have that duality where you have a political center and you have a financial center. And you don't hear any noise or anything like that. No one is saying that the central bank should move out of Abuja. The central bank cannot move out of Abuja. To the extent that the central bank governor is going to remain in Abuja, then the central bank, I mean, to all intents and purposes, is still based in Abuja. Because I mean, the power still remains in Abuja. The MPC is going to be continue to be held in Abuja, because you cannot move the central bank, all of its leadership. If for example, now if they were to tell us that the CBN governor himself is moving out of Abuja, then I would say that doesn't make any sense, because there will be, I mean, the CBN governor has more work that he has to do with the executive, with the legislature, you know, all those. So we will now be paying for you flying up and down. But those that operationally, it makes sense for them to be in Lagos. You can divvy up your headquarters and make sure that from an operational perspective, from an efficiency perspective, it makes sense. And it brings me to the fact that, I mean, I found myself agreeing with you know, Sanusi Lamido for one of the few times that, I mean, there are times that I totally am at odds with the man, especially for how he ran the central bank during his time. But he was spot on in his response. I mean, this is not something that should be causing debates. This is something that you should look at it on its merit and then, you know, take it for what it is. But this is Nigeria. Everything is politics, everything is ethnic, everything. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, on the one hand, we have Vice President Shettima, who issued a statement supporting the transfer of those departments to Lagos. He said, look, this is about banking efficiency, that anybody who is claiming there's some sort of agenda against the North is mistaken. And on the other hand, you have the prominent Northern Senator Ali Ndume, I believe from Borno State. He alleges that this is an attempt by Tinubu to corner all the resources for his Lagos boys at the expense of the North. And then you have another group who have actually come forward and said, actually, what's really happening is the people who are making the noise are the children of the Northern political elite who got lucrative appointments in the CBN when Buhari was president, and many of them were not even coming to work. And now that departments are being moved to Lagos, it means that they have to move, and that's what it's really about. The elite, children of the elite, don't want to move to Lagos. and they've now turned this into a North versus South drama. So what is your view, Dr. Aminu? What is the underlying cause of this controversy?
Thank you very much. First of all, I will address quickly the ones talking about is the children of the elites. And I think that came from Sunusi Lamido, who happens to be just a glorified quota system CBN governor, very incompetent, and all he did was copy and paste Soludo's policies, and he couldn't even do anything. After all, he got sacked by Goodluck Jonathan, and he got sacked again by Ganduje for stealing, So imagine, getting sacked by another thief, how low that can be. But nonetheless, if we are talking about the children of the elites that they don't want to go to Lagos, I think that is just him showing his level of incompetence, because he is his children are equally like that, and that is why he can't even give them any job to do. But I don't want to go personal there. My apologies if I went too personal. But I think whoever is going to be thinking about it is because of the children of the elites. I have information that it is only the financial system stability unit that is going to Lagos. That means only one CBN governor, deputy governor, that is going to Lagos, and I think he has about five departments under him: banking supervision, consumer protection, financial policy, other financial institution supervision, and payment system management. So there is, if we are going to talk about it objectively, there's nothing wrong with that, and it is 90% of them that are going over to that particular to Lagos, while other departments, can have their representatives. If any child of the elite, can have his way, this is Nigeria. They know how to do it. They will remain as part of that 10%. That they can find them anywhere, even if it is the children of Senator Ndume that was talking. He knows how to do it. If he wants his daughter to go back to Borno, they will take her back to Borno, wherever he wants to take her. But why is he speaking? He's just been a useful idiot, just like how Senator Lamido is a useful idiot to the Lagos boys. And why am I against this? Is because the Lagos boys want everything to be at their convenience. These are the people, that never allowed Nigeria to rest between 2010 till they got power in 2015. They even said they are going to form a parallel government, So if we allow them to continue to do this kind of things, who knows what will happen when we take over power and they have this kind of institutions within their localities, what they will be able to do. They'll be burning these places. So some things, we have to be very careful, because these Lagos boys are very, very dubious. And like I must agree with Ndume to a certain degree, not about the movement, They don't know anything. These Lagos boys don't know anything. They believe life begins and ends in Lagos, which is not true, which is a complete fantasy. So why should Nigeria be a toy for a certain group of lazy individuals? If they want Nigeria, or they want Nigeria is not just Lagos, it's not there, it's not anybody's property. But if it is regarding efficiency, how has let's go back and ask Governor Soludo, how has he managed CBN over those periods? He did it efficiently with very minimal budget. And let's be honest, and let's be clear, and be very objective. We are in Nigeria now that we are talking about fire. We are in an economic crisis. We are trying to stabilize currency. We are trying to stabilize the economy. There are five objectives of this CBN governor that he cannot even meet. He's busy, moving places when he cannot even meet his own objectives. Why is he talking about this? This is not part of our problem in Nigeria for now. Nigeria, what we are thinking about, what we should be talking about, is how can we fight inflation? He can't do that. He's incompetent, incapable of doing that. But he is busy moving, what do you call it? Moving offices, is that going to change our is that going to bring price stability? Why is he, look at how he has been squeezing the economy for no reasons, creating cash shortages and all that, All they are doing, they are not doing any policy. All they are trying to do is satisfy their own personal interest. So, I think this is completely uncalled for, even though it is within their own rights to do it. But there are bigger things for us to address in Nigeria. There are much more bigger things to address. Controlling the inflation, why is he printing more money to do what? If he's trying to save money, maybe he should tell us how moving people to Lagos is going to save money. But they are not talking about that. They're not talking about that. How our foreign reserve is being squeezed. Our foreign exchange, we don't even want to start talking about foreign exchange, what are they doing about that? What are they? They should have told us this is what will bring efficiency into the system. No, but all we know is he earlier told us that everybody that got a job, should declare whether they are personal, they are related to a personal, politically exposed people. He has five objectives. He has five objectives: ensuring monetary and price stability, and doing other things, that I don't even want to be talking about. Why is he just focused on this menial issues, nonsensical issues that will not bring any stability to the Nigerian economy, especially in this current situation that they put us in? It is a self-harm they created, but they are trying to deviate, just create more chaos and calling out their useful idiots, to continue to create chaos. And when you hear this Indume talking about speaking like that, whenever you hear Indume, just know that that thing is going down the drain. Someone is putting him there to speak. He's a complete, he's one of their useful idiots. He has been doing that since under Buhari. The moment he will raise story, just look under, look at where they are misdirecting us. That is where they are going, and this is what he will continue to do. Then when they finish what they are doing, then they will come back. So it is, they have a target, they are doing something very sinister to Nigeria, and they are only distracting us. So I think they are completely missing the objective of a CBN governor, or how they should drive our economy back to growth, and how they should stabilize that economy that is volatile and wobbly, and people are not happy completely. People are losing money. The whole system is chaotic, but they are busy, thinking of changing offices. And look at even Keir Moore himself. What are they doing with other corruption issues in Fan? No, but they are all sweeping it under the carpet and talking about, yeah, let's go back to Lagos. Then go back to Lagos and do what? Where is the Nigerian air that they were talking about they were going to bring? Is moving to Lagos going to bring Nigerian air, or which one is much more important? Why couldn't they just focus on bringing back Nigerian air? And these guys, they still think they are in an opposition. They are part of the opposition. They do something, then they come and critique themselves, or they are in a campaign mood. They are refusing to do the proper action. It's, to be honest, my anxiety is rising. Let me keep quiet. I think whatever they are doing, they are completely wrong, and they shouldn't be doing it. There are better things to focus on, especially in this their first 8 years, 8 months. It's scary for the. For me to think of them sitting leading Nigeria for the next 8 years. I don't know where we will be. Thank
Thank you,
you.
Dr. Aminu. But because of time, we need to move on to our third topic, which is the visit to Nigeria of the US Secretary of State. Phoenix, Anthony Blinken came to Abuja, met with Yusuf Tuggar, our foreign minister, and I gather he also met with the president. First of all, Phoenix, do you know why Blinken is in Nigeria? And Does this indicate that the US is happy or supportive of the administration of Bola Ahmed Tinubu?
Well, we know that Blinken is doing a four-country tour of Africa, primarily West Africa. So we know that he's been to Cote d'Ivoire. I don't know if it's Senegal, Nigeria, and then Angola. The agenda is primarily around cooperation and making sure that, you know, they show the U.S. presence and willingness to work with African countries, especially in West Africa, especially in the light of a number of things. One is we know that Russia has been playing a role in the Sahel around, you know, Mali, Niger, with the coups that have gone on in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Niger, and we know that that has unsettled the US, which had security arrangements within that zone. We also know that China has been playing in Africa for quite a while. So when those two are in an area, the US doesn't want to neglect that area so that, they don't start playing a chasing game in a zone that people are suggesting is fast becoming a breeding ground for the next set of terrorists. So for security reasons, for economic cooperation reasons, we're seeing Blinken, you know, do this tour, which is like the third time he's focused on Nigeria. This is the second time he'll come into Nigeria physically since Biden came to power. So I think we should, and I've said this before, I think we should not forget that, look, there's no permanent enemy, no permanent friend in international diplomacy. It's only permanent interest. It is in the U.S. interest that Nigeria, you know, either remains neutral, but more favorably that Nigeria leans towards them rather than China or Russia. And so they will work with anybody that has come through your democratic system. I mean, you guys ran elections. Elections were hotly disputed. They went to the courts. It doesn't matter whether people like me think that the elections were rigged or that the courts did the wrong thing. Nigeria's democratic process has ended. A leader is in place for the next 4 years. The U.S. has to do business with him. And so they will come and, you know, show that they are interested in doing business and making sure that Nigeria is on their side and that they don't lose the initiative to China and Russia. So I think it's clear that this is simply business. And we look forward to seeing how far the cooperation goes and whether it truly, you know, helps move the needle, particularly on the economy. Of course, security to a large extent, if we can secure, you know, more help, more training, more equipment for our military, that will go a long way. But I mean, I think for me, the bigger issue is on the economy and seeing, you know, how can we get, support that allows us to get out of the malaise and the issues that we are currently facing as a country, you know, economically.
Thank you, Phoenix. But one of the statements the Secretary of State made was he made reference to the fact that the U.S. was supportive of Bola Tinubu's economic reforms, and they were also supportive of the subsidy removal policies. But is it true that economic reforms have taken place that are worthy of support? And is it true that the fuel subsidy has been removed? So do you therefore agree with the Secretary of State on these issues?
Well, I agree in part. I mean, we know that pronouncements were made. We know that there was the beginnings of economic reforms. We saw announcement that subsidy was going to be removed. We saw prices go up. And then as one expected, they backtracked. We saw the FX issue, an attempt to float and merge rates and remove the 41 item ban, all of the things that led to issues, under the Buhari administration. And so the issue, I mean, to an outsider, they would say, yes, there was the stated intent to do these things. There was the beginning, but that they ran into issues. That's what they would claim. And so, in diplomatic speak, if you truly want to you be friends with somebody, you don't point out their failures. You speak to some of the things they've tried to get right, and then you tell them that you hope that they will continue in the right vein and move forward. But to be clear, we haven't seen any outcomes of any economic reforms, because of the stop start manner in which they've gone with this. They've created even more problems. If you had definitively said, okay, we're floating our currency, we're removing subsidy, come what way, we don't care whether this happens or not. You signal strongly to the economy that we're staying the course, but then you also do other things in parallel. That has always been the issue. It's nobody ever said that economic reforms were not going to be painful. We had wasted too much time. We had wasted too much opportunities to do the right thing under Buhari, and having not done that, we knew that it was going to be painful to do those economic reforms, but it's better to take the pain and then move forward. But in taking the pain, you needed to make sure that you are doing things to alleviate the pain, and more importantly, again, you are signaling in the right direction. This government instead came in and started doing jamborees, went to Unga, spent 500,000 on hotel, went to Dubai, doing all sorts of things. Look at their budget. It's no different from what Buhari used to do. So you're like, what is the point to the economic reforms if fiscally you are not doing the right things that you're supposed to do? If you keep on doing the wrong things, but it's only the people that are bearing the pain, how do you expect there to be any progress? And more importantly, it was clear that Nigeria had run into problems with ability to generate FX from exports, run into problems with ability to attract FDI, because nobody trusts your government. They made claims, they said they were going to do certain things, they got halfway and stopped. So people don't trust. We see, still see issues with rule of law, still see, things, that threaten, commerce and business. And so, there's clearly a problem with defining the right reforms to be done and following through and making it go well. So I say all of it to say, yes, Blinken is partially right in saying that there were some reforms, but even he knows that they've not done enough. And I'm sure in their private meetings, you'll be telling them that, look, guys, you have to go further and do the right things for you to see the results that you expect or that you need, more importantly.
Thank you, Phoenix. Dr. Aminu, your party, the PDP, is obviously one of the opposition parties. Do you know, first of all, if they met with Secretary Blinken? And secondly, what is your party's response to this visit? Does that constitute a threat to yourselves? Because if the US government is putting their weight behind Bola Tinubu's administration, does that mean they are dismissing the concerns that your party has raised about the quality of his leadership and his handling of the affairs of the country?
Thank you, Mike. I do not think my party met with them because there was a newspaper report that says PDP and Labour Party were I think were not Anyway, let me not quote on that newspaper report. I did not come across anything that says they have met. But for them, for him to accept Tinubu's what do you call it? Tinubu's government. I think we can't. We all have to respect what the dubious Supreme Court did. You know, we have to respect it, even though we disagree with it. And government, for him, he needs to do business. And what I gathered, and what I will be happy for him to do with, especially with America, is to see how they can support Nigeria through the intelligence sharing and providing equipments and what have not. But it seems like, I mean, we've been there before. They've done it with Buhari. You know, Buhari has gone to kneel down before them to beg, but they are not going to do anything with this APC government. It is clear, you know, America knows the game of this APC government. They never take them seriously. So let's assume Blinken came to open the American corner. That is what he came to do in Lagos, as far as I'm concerned, you know, which was a regional resource center for information and programs, you know, to broadcast America all over the world with their American history, culture, and current events. But we know they are not coming here to give us any proper support because of this APC government. Nobody is taking them seriously. We have seen what they are doing with the at international stage. We are the biggest joke in Nigeria, and these people are the contributors of what is making what the world is, how the world is looking at Nigeria, APC government. So I do not take any. I mean, Blinken made a mistake for not meeting the opposition. He should have, but maybe that is not part of the agenda. You know, he was here probably to open the American corner in Lagos and bug off, you know, because Nigeria is no longer a serious business for a lot of people because of Tinubu, on not just Tinubu, because of the APC government completely. So we as the opposition, we have to consolidate, come together, unite, and make sure we shout very, very loud, and make sure that people realize that we can be serious again. Nigeria can be taken serious again, but only if we are in a different setting without this APC government. So I think this is where my position and where I can, I mean, what I can say about it.
Thank you. And then my final question to you is,
Yeah.
obviously the Nigeria has been pleading with the US for security support. And under the Buhari administration, for example, they even offered the US the opportunity to locate one of their bases on our territory. But the US appeared uninterested, unlike a few years before when they were hoping to build a base here. So if that offer was made again, would you support it? The US locating a base in Nigeria? Would that be something you would be in favor of?
I thought the American corner that Blinken opened up is that kind of base that he opened in Lagos, which tells us that it's a complete joke. But to answer your question, yes, I will support it. But is that what is going to bring a solution to our insecurity problem? The answer is no. Security assistance from not just America, if we're going to bring it from wherever it's going to come from, you know. We are not going to, it's not going to solve us the problem. We need reforms in the military, in our security systems. Where we talked about it earlier, you know, Phoenix mentioned earlier that we have a very dubious, he did not say that, I'm the one saying it. We have a very dubious, what do you call this man? National security advisor, you know, that he does not even know what he's doing. I'm sorry to say. If we have people like that, you know, leading our system, how can we even achieve anything reasonable? We need reforms. And a lot of security issues that we have in Nigeria are community-based issues. You know, we need to win our military people, our security agencies must win community trust. If they don't win this community trust, we are not going very far. And I'm talking about all the geopolitical regions, you know. And eventually, when we topple APC, when we get them out of power, we are going to have the Yoruba nation, you know, rising. We need to have a proper framework, you know, that we will make sure that Nigerian security is formidable and can work across the country, not just, you know, in a WAP system. So it's good America can come. We can give them whatever space they want for them to put up their drones like they did in the Sahel region. But it's not going to take us very far. It's not going to take us very far. So I think that's what I can say about that.
Thank you very much, Dr. Aminu. But our time is up, so we have to end the conversation here this week. But first of all, I must thank you and Phoenix for taking time out of your busy schedules to be here. And last but not least, I must thank our listeners for being loyal and supportive. But until same time next week, I say have a fantastic 7 days to everyone.
Thank you all. Bye.
Thanks, Michael, and thanks, Dr. Aminu, for joining us today. Thank you, listeners. Have a great week. Bye, everyone.